All right, welcome back to the 25th episode now of Keep Chopping Wood, a Big Cat Country podcast. Thanking you guys for rating, reviewing us on iTunes. It's been really helping with the outreach, and thank you for all the interaction that you guys have been giving to the Keep Chopping Wood Twitter handle too, sending in questions and stuff for us to answer on every show. We will continue to wrap up every show with that question and answer segment. So, like I said, please keep sending your questions in. Ryan's been doing an awesome job promoting the show from the Twitter handle, interacting with people and things of that nature. So for this week, our guest is Jeff Risden. Hank and I have both followed Jeff for a long, long time, know him like through draft Twitter. We're having him on to preview the Lions game. Because Jeff, you actually live in Michigan, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I live on the west side of the state. I actually live closer to Chicago than Detroit, but I'm close enough that I'm still guilty.
Yeah, I don't need to be a big Lions fan, big Michigan fan. So, and we're also hitting this point of the season too, to where the Jaguar season is completely lost. So, we're gonna have you to kick off pretty much draft season for us. So it all ends up working out perfectly. You can follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff Risden. Like I said, he writes for FanRag Sports, but his big one is especially lately is all of his work on draft breakdown. So definitely check all that stuff out. Jeff, thank you for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys. It's a pleasure to be with you, and it's a pleasure to talk to a team that's in worse straits than my own.
Let's kick this off, just jumping right into the Lions, because Hank and I might do some wrap-up from Houston from last week, but I don't really think that there's anything new to cover. It's pretty much the same team we've been watching for this last month. For you, on the other hand, though, it seems to be that, especially with how the rest of the NFC North is playing, the Lions seem to be right in the thick of things, even though that they've got a flawed team, but they're right in the hunt.
Yeah, and right now the main goal is to suck less than all the other NFC North teams, and they're doing a pretty good job of doing that. Now, you wouldn't know that if you watched us play defense, but they're in first place. They have the tiebreaker over Minnesota. They also have all three NFC North opponents still coming to Detroit this year. Oh, nice. So, man, things are coming up Lions a little bit. Now, that's in the past. This has been an issue for us, but we're hoping that this time it's different.
So, I guess the turning point, I mean, they were kind of in dire straits halfway through the season last year. The offense was looking terrible, and then they make that offensive coordinator change to Jim Bob Cooter, who every person that is in football media or writes about football has to say or write Jim Bob Cooter's name every time he comes up. But just kind of what – I mean, I know that – especially switching an offensive coordinator midstream in the middle of the season, the Jaguars are kind of going through that now, but they're still pretty much running the same offense. Did Cooter continue to run what Detroit was doing before, but just kind of a game plan and call the game better?
There were a few things that changed. The number one thing, they simplified the blocking scheme. The offensive line was very overwhelmed, and they had just some stupid concepts. They had plays where the right tackle would cross and block the right defensive end, and the left tackle would do the same. So their tackles are literally swapping behind the line during a play while they're trying to get a draw play to Joik Bell, who likes to stop his feet as soon as he gets the ball on a handoff. It was asinine. They've implemented a little bit more of a zone concept this year, but basically they simplified things. They got the ball out of Matthew Stafford's hands. They spread things out a little bit more to give him more immediate options. It used to be that they would have – well, you'd have Calvin Johnson, which isn't there anymore. And he would run his pattern, and then like two other guys would react off that. And this year, it's more varied. You got Marvin Jones, you got Theo Riddick coming out of the backfield, and it's like there's four, 1A options. And so the defenses have a tougher time picking on it. And Stafford, to his credit, has figured out how to read the defense quickly and process what he's doing and take advantage of the most favorable matchup as fast as he can. And as you know, they have trailed in the final 2 minutes of every single game this year. And he has led 5 comeback drives, which is more than anybody else. And
super
happy about that, but it's entirely untenable. So from a Detroit standpoint, we're hoping that they have a game where it isn't a nail biter, one way or the other. You know, it would be nice to have a game that's, you know, 39, even if you're on the losing end. At least then you don't have to worry about, you know, wasting your entire afternoon.
At least if I, well, you played Jacksonville this week, so, you know.
Well, that's the hope. You know, and Detroit's coming off of a bye week. They're getting some players back. Darius Slay's going to be back in the game. He missed the last week. There's potential that DeAndre Levy will be back. The tight end position after Eric Ebron on this team is a black hole. The best one that we had this year was Cole Wick.
That's a fake name.
That's the battle that Detroit's offense is having now, is getting sustained production from one guy over a set amount of weeks. Like Marvin Jones started the year on fire. If you had him in fantasy, you loved it. Last 3 weeks, I think he has 4 catches. So it's weird now that we don't know who's going to go up on a week-to-week basis. And it's kind of frustrating, but it's also kind of exciting because, like, oh, maybe Marvin will come off this week. You know, maybe it's Ebron's week. You know, it's
right.
There's a lot more options there, which is overall a better thing. But, yeah, it would still be nice to have Megatron out here.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that what you just said about Stafford stepping into a role as more of a leader this year, I think, is really interesting, because that's always a really, I don't want to say a weird dynamic, but it's always something that's interesting to keep your eye on. Like when the best players on the team, whether they're leaders or not, I know that like that's kind of corny stuff to a lot of people, but I think you're kind of seeing the negatives of that in Jacksonville, to where they don't really have one of those guys at very many positions. Even the guy who everybody says is like their quote unquote leader in Puz doesn't really ever even come off as like an in your face, you know, calling other people out, keeping them accountable and things of that nature. They just really don't have that guy on the entire roster, let alone the quarterback, who's probably the worst player on the field for the most part. So
You guys really don't like Bortles, do you? Can I tell you a quick story about Bortles? I go to Detroit Lions preseason games, and his rookie year, the Lions played Johnny Manziel and the Browns and Blake Bortles and the Jaguars in their rookie years, and the best rookie quarterback I saw that preseason was Connor Shaw. He was a sixth-round pick, and he actually looked pretty good. He's had his leg broken a couple of times now, and I think he's on the IR for the Bears, and is probably done. But he was so much. It was striking how much more ready and how much more poised he was than both Bortles and Johnny Football. I'm like, oh man, these two teams are in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, man, and I mean, looking back to it, it's just kind of the realization and the sinking in of that, like, he should really not have played at all his rookie year. I know that they aren't going to win anything with Chad Henne, and Chad Henne was pretty unbearable to watch, but I don't know. I know he had the progression his second year, but I think he just needed the time to sit. I don't know if he would have been any better because of that, but just seems like a lot of bad habits got reinforced. Now, Stafford specifically, he was injured a lot his first 2 years. So, I mean, I know he was playing, but getting seasons cut short and everything. But do you feel comfortable saying that right now, like, this is the best he has played for his entire career? Like, even better than the 40 touchdown season that he had back in, what was it, like 2012 or whatever?
Yeah, 2011. 2011. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. This is far and away his best year. He's making, and one of the things that you know that the analytical crowd knocks for is that he's making a lot simpler throws. But that's good because he used to get criticized for taking too many risks, and those risks didn't always pay off. You know, it was very high risk, high reward. Now he's doing it in a much safer approach. So yeah, he's in complete command of Jim Bob Cooter's offense. It's been a godsend since the changeover. From Joe Lombardi, who ironically was somebody that we all wanted. You know, Detroit was like, oh yeah, we got a Lombardi, man. Things are coming our way. He just had absolutely no eye for what worked against what defense. And Cooter has a great idea. I can say right now they're going to run plays this week that they haven't run before, because he'll see something that's vulnerable with Jacksonville's defense. And I don't know what it'll be, but it'll probably work just because he's very bright in that regard of attacking weaknesses, and attacking weaknesses over and over again. They did that against in Indianapolis in the first game. Their cornerback opposite Vontae Davis could not cover anybody. And Stafford, like, I think he threw six passes in a row against him, and they completed five of them. It's been fun to watch him grow because there were times early on when he was a lot like Bortles is now, where he really struggled, and there were people that wanted to bench him, and there were people that wanted to trade him so we could run Kellen Moore in there, which is the fan base that I have to deal with. Just be thankful Kellen Moore isn't on your team.
Yeah,
we're getting tweets about Brandon Allen.
Yeah, it has been Brandon Allen. Like I've actually called for Brandon Allen to play a little bit because I'm like, what you brought up with how right now he's taking and making the easy throws, and that's something that's really really missing from the Jacksonville offense right now. Last year they were able to kind of live and die off of the big play. This year the big plays are gone and they can't even hit the layups. So
I watched the Houston game, and as you guys know, I lived in Houston for a while. My son is a big Texans fan, so it was a banner weekend at the Risden home. Just watching the Jacksonville offense, I don't really get what they're trying to accomplish a lot of the time. And some of that's on Bortles because of his just god-awful wind-up and release and footwork where he has toes pointing in opposite directions and his weight isn't right. There's a whole lot of mechanical things wrong, and I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel about Chad Henne. I'm not a big Chad Henne guy, but it might do Bortles good to sit and watch a competent professional, a lesser talented guy, just to see him, you know, manage a game.
Hank, this is something that I don't remember if you tweeted this or if you just texted it to me or said it in one of the group chats or what, but it's probably true that they win that game against Houston last week if Chad Henne's playing that game, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. No, it was like you never like to pick apart like individual plays. Like these are the plays that like made the game. But there's literally three throws that Bortles made that lost him the game that as awful as we've seen Chad Henne be, he is at least, I don't even want to say serviceable, but he can like hit those layup throws, you know what I mean? Like that pick six, Henne doesn't make that because I think it was Prisco that tweeted out the picture of it. Like the all 22 angle, you can see the corner breaking on it and knowing it's an like interception moment, like Bortles just like starts winding it up with that awful release. And then the two, Hearns and Marquise Lee, I think they were just like not a like defensive back within five or six steps of them, and he missed them completely. Like it's not even like consistent misses where he's like messing up in like one area. He overthrew one by a mile, and then he made Lee come back like 4 to 5 yards. And like any other probably like starting quarterback in the NFL makes two of those throws and doesn't make that pick six on the very first drives.
Yeah, I think I heard Baselli say on the Monday radio show that, or maybe it was Baselli or Shadrick, I don't remember. But like three games this year, he's come out and thrown an interception on the opening drive.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was this game, Packers and Bears game. It's kind of like cliche to like say like because there's a whole like another four quarters left, but it's just impossible for this team to dig themselves out of any holes. Like they have no margin for error. And when you're making that error on the very first play of the game already when you have zero confidence, that's killing them.
That's exactly what I see from afar too. So that's, you know, foreign eyes confirm for you.
Yeah. So we're pretty much in lockstep.
You know, the Lions defense has been wretched. They're 32nd in, I think it's Football Outsiders, whatever their thing is. I get confused with the damn analytical sites. You know, they're not good. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And the teams that have beaten them consistently, our linebackers are brutal in coverage. They're terrible. You guys remember Thurston Armbrister?
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, he started for us and was actually an upgrade. That's how bad the linebackers are in Detroit. You guys will appreciate this. The Lions are this is our new general manager. He came from the Patriots, so he's got the Patriots' veil of secrecy. Somebody actually started a rumor that DeAndre Levy's injury came as a result of being bitten by a sloth while he was on his South American excursion. And nobody can actually come out and say, no, that's not what happened. So it's like taking a whole life of its own. Nobody can refute it because he won't say anything and the team won't say anything. So if you're looking for a week for Julius Thomas to go off, if you're looking for Marquise Lee is the kind of receiver that gives the Lions fits. They do well against the Allen Robinsons and Allen Hurns of the world. The bigger guys, they actually play those guys pretty well. Like when we played Dallas, Cole Beasley is the guy that kills us. It's not Dez Bryant. Josh Huff, when he was, before he, you know, threw away his career when he was in Philadelphia,
right?
He was the biggest problem on the team, not Jordan Matthews. So that's the kind of guy that if you're going to get some success from Bortles in the offense, those are the guys who are going to win it.
Yeah, that's kind of just in lockstep with how the offense has performed up to this point too. I mean, Julius Thomas has gotten benched. I'm actually going to let Hank riff on Julius in a little bit, but for the most part, it's pretty much been the Marquise Lee show, and nobody else has really shown up this year. I mean, Allen Robinson had a productive, nice bounce back game last week against Houston, but it's not like. With him and Blake, they're just so off of each other right now that I keep describing it as it's two players in a rut, and even one, if one gets out of them, the other one's going to just drag him right back down into it. So it's not really like change the game and dictate the game type of production, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like individually, like Allen had his best game by far last week. But it wasn't even like, because it seemed like all his plays were just him having to make like a miraculous adjustment on a Bortles pass, and he couldn't get anything afterwards.
Yeah, so Hank, you talked a lot last week about effort issues, especially with there were two in particular, Julius Thomas and Jeremy Parnell, and one of those guys has found his way to the bench pretty much in Julius, basically just playing in red zone and on third down. Do you expect that to change at all as the year goes on?
Yeah, no, not at all. Like they're basically doing anything at this point to salvage the season and find any positives. So I think if they can find any real scapegoats, and that's not to say Julius is a scapegoat. And the big thing with Julius is, one, obviously he's not going to be a run blocker. I mean, if they signed him and expected him to contribute at all as a run blocker, that's on them for being terrible evaluators. But I think it was you that mentioned it earlier. I don't know if it was on Twitter or in one of the chats, but just like the adjustment in culture he's had to make going from Denver to Jacksonville. He's gone from a quarterback that by all means is a psycho and holds everybody accountable and Peyton Manning to Blake Bortles, who can't hold anybody accountable because, one, he's playing putrid and we've never really seen him like step up like on the field or anything. So, I mean, at that point, you know, he's made his money. Like, what really is making him want to put in the effort at this point? And then the other thing was, I think it was Ryan O'Hallahan, the Times Union beat writer, tweeted out a stat. It was his last 17 receptions have a total of 38 yards after the catch. And it was really like apparent versus the Texans. They kept trying to throw him these short passes at a line of scrimmage and ask him to break a tackle and get some yards after catch. And I think Jeff has a better chance of getting a first down after the catch. It is amazing seeing him try to break a tackle. But just, it seems like they want him to be something he's not. You know, that guy who's that reliable third down chain mover, or that, like, H-back who can, you know, chip the defensive end and stuff.
The entire philosophy of not carrying a fullback and just running out a bunch of bad tight ends and trying different ones out as H-backs is just a terrible philosophy to me. I don't understand it. I've never really agreed with that philosophy, and this year has basically just confirmed it for me. I mean, because the thing is that even with tight ends, even if they're good blockers, a lot of them are just okay blockers on the edge.
Where
you just got to, like, reach or seal a guy. And those H-back and fullback blocks where you got to really, like, crowbar a guy out for the kickout block or for the ISO block is just – it's a completely fucking different story than just reaching a guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, we've seen it be the culprit of literally, like, blowing up complete plays and touchdowns. Like, I'm not sure if you remember that one play in the goal line series against Kansas City where Julius was at H-back and he motioned after the snap instead of before, and he ran into Ivory as he got the ball.
There's been a lot of those. Like I said, they've basically had to try to use him as the H-back because he was the starting tight end, and he's really the only one that has the body type for it, so to speak, because he's like 6'3" and stockier. He's not, because Koyak and Mercedes, they both block all right, but they're like 6'5", lanky-ass dudes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They can't lay those crowbar blocks. It's just the leverage of it is different. It doesn't work with those guys. So, I mean, I'm happy to see Koyak more in the base formations because he can actually run block.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're, like, the guy they thought was going to be the game changer in their offense is getting benched for a seventh-round tight end. It's just indicative of like how well Dak's feeling has gone so far.
Yep, pretty much.
And it's not even like a speculation benching. I think like they like straight up asked like Gus like why they were like why
yeah,
is
no, it? No, I saw that they asked him something about Julius Thomas and he
yeah he brought
responded
up,
right? he responded with Koyak. We like what Koyak does. Which I mean, he's telling you everything you need to know right there.
Yeah.
So
that's brutal, man.
Yeah. I saw.
Wow.
Anytime you can bench $40 million with Ben Koyak, you got to do it.
Yep.
So, this is killer radio.
Yeah, baby.
Awesome. Sorry, I had to get a beer.
I'm right there with you. So I figured we like I said, we don't know like who in Jacksonville who's going to be here long term for the future in terms of GM. We got a pretty good idea that the coach is no longer going to be here, so this defensive scheme is probably going to be getting replaced with something else. But so we don't know specifics for Jacksonville really, but I figured that we just like riff on you with some prospects.
Sure.
In general, like it's pretty obvious the Jags are going to be picking in the top five. Quarterback is a major issue. We don't know if if there's going to be new people and they're going to be married to Bortles or not. So, I know Watson and Kaiser have been the guys like I've seen talk up the most this year. Are they worth a top five pick? Is there any quarterback worth a top five pick in this draft, or is it kind of a punt on quarterback draft?
I would not take any of the guys in the first round. But the thing is, if you're going to get a quarterback, you've got to get ahead of Cleveland. You've got to get ahead of Chicago because they're both going quarterback. And,
for sure.
You know, right now that's not the case for Jacksonville, I believe. I think they're slated to pick after them. So you're going to get the third guy. Now, if that guy's Mitch Trubisky, maybe. There's a lot of things to like with him. Between Kaiser and Watson, I prefer Kaiser. Now, he's had a terrible year, and some of it is the fact that the team around him has absolutely mailed it in. They are trying to get Brian Kelly fired at Notre Dame, and they're not even making it – they're not even trying to hide it anymore.
Right.
And that – he's trying to balance, you know, both sides of that coin. So you can throw out a lot of his bad play on that. He's got a tremendous amount of tools. He's got a fantastic arm, can throw the deep – ball across the field on a rope, can throw the short passes reliably well too. Doesn't necessarily feel pressure all that well, but there's a lot to work with him. Now, I've been told, and I've tweeted this out, the same people who told me that Ronnie Stanley was going back to school and told me that DeShone Kizer is going back to school. And nobody believed me on Ronnie Stanley, and I was right, so screw y'all on that. So I'll stand by the fact that DeShone Kizer, until he says he's coming out, I'm saying he stays in school. Now, DeShone Watson, there are times when I like him, and there are times when I feel like I'm looking at Johnny Football 2.0. And if you watched the interception the other night in Clemson's game, that was a total Johnny Football moment where he makes a couple of moves and gets free, but he only looks at his receiver. He doesn't see the defense around it, and he just flings it. And flings it up there off of, you know, his feet are too close together, his arm, he saws off the end of the follow-through, or doesn't even follow through at all, and it just sails, and it's easy pick. That's a real problem, because that's something that's very difficult to coach out of a guy. You know, like we were talking about Stafford with his bad habits and interceptions early, a lot of that was him trying to force the ball, you know, on designed plays to Calvin Johnson or to, you know, when our number two wide receiver was Chris Durham, who shouldn't have ever been in the league. Good times in Detroit, let me tell you. So I'm much more of a Kaiser fan if he comes out than I am a Watson fan. And I would put Trubisky ahead of him. And I'm not a big guy who believes in that the whole, you know, spread offense thing. But every time I watch Luke Falk, man, I like that kid. I don't think he's a first-round pick. But there's a lot to work with there, too. And Mason Rudolph, to some extent, too. Those guys intrigue me. I need to watch them more, and I need to see what they can do in a real offense. But at this point in the process, I like both of those guys more than I like Jared Goff. Now, I'll preface that by saying Jared Goff was my number five quarterback last year. I'm not a Goff guy at all. But I like both of those guys, too, but they're not first-rounders. So if you miss out on the top two, And something comes around at the, if you trade up into the bottom of the first, or be patient and try to hope that somebody falls, like Teddy Bridgewater, that situation. Not to bring up a sore subject for y'all, but it's, it's there. And I would pull the trigger on that if you can't get the guy at the top. And if you, want to go on defense, which is, I assume, who we're going to talk next, because some of the guys there, that's where the cream of this draft is exactly what you guys need on defense.
Yeah, exactly. Quarterback, I don't know if it's going to happen. They'll probably not be looking at guys in the top five or anything like that, just because it seems like the value is not going to be matching up there. I mean, it's basically the same thing that they did with when this regime came in and they rode with Blaine for another year instead of investing in a quarterback at all, and then they took Blake the year after. So
you've already gotten your bad money on him on his rookie contract out of the way. You might as well keep him. He's worth more to you than he is to anybody else in what you get in return. So I would expect that Blake Bortles will be back next year. Now, whether he's starting or not is another story, but I certainly would project him as your starter going forward until proven otherwise.
Yeah, I think so. They'll probably bring in I think they're much more likely to go the veteran route than to sink draft capital into a quarterback.
Yeah,
that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Defense, though, like you said, defense is the cream of the crop in this class. Who is your top defensive player right now?
I like Myles Garrett a lot. Even like everybody talked about the Cam Robinson game where he played against Alabama, and Garrett was at maybe 80% of go with his ankle. His ability to get so low for a tall guy and get around and dip that shoulder and rip his arms and beat tackles inside, beat them outside, beat them with speed, beat them with power. That's rare. I mean, that's something that you just don't come across every day. And if you can get a guy like that, it doesn't matter who your other rusher is, you bring him in there. You want to emulate Denver, where they got DeMarcus Ware to add with Von Miller. He's somewhere in between those two. I don't think he's quite as dynamic as Von, because I don't think he's as lithe in space, but man, he's going to get 10 sacks as a rookie. He's going to be a guy that you can count on to get, 12 to 15 sacks every year if he's healthy and doesn't, totally screw himself up. By all accounts, he's a pretty good dude off the field, pretty smart football player. So,
yeah,
and if you got a shot at him, you got to go there. He's number one with the bullet. But to get back to Peppers, he is not a cornerback, not at all. And that's what he came to Michigan at. And I think there's a lot of people that still hold this bias against him. They're like, he was a cornerback. He should be really good at coverage. Well, they moved him from cornerback precisely because he wasn't good in coverage. If he's a phenomenal athlete. He made a play. I was at the Colorado game and I was at the Maryland game. And the play where he made against Maryland, where he picked up the fumble and ran it, not many people have ever run 90 yards that fast on a football field with the ball in their hands, ever. I said in another podcast that I was on right after the time, I was fortunate enough, I saw Rod Woodson play at Purdue when he was in college. That's the fastest man I've ever seen, and that's the best football player I've ever seen in person. Peppers was so damn close to that. He can play linebacker, but you have to keep in mind, he's maybe 210, maybe 215 tops. He bulked up to 220 in the offseason for a little bit, and it did impact his speed and his agility. So he dropped back down. He's playing at, I think he's playing at 212 is the word that I got, and he's right at 6 feet. He's probably going to measure like 5'11", 8", so maybe a hair under it, but he looks like he's 6 feet tall. So that's smaller for a linebacker. This is a guy that you want to play as a base safety. He can slide up and be your nickel linebacker. He can cover over any flex tight end. He's a killer for that. And you see so many of those guys in the league these days. You look at Jack Doyle in Indianapolis as an opponent for you guys. They have to face off against your Dwayne Allen. Those guys are out there, and Peppers is perfect at neutralizing those guys, because even though he's light, man, he's really he's functionally strong. Now, moving him off of that and playing him, Michigan plays him in the box quite a bit. He actually plays as an outside linebacker, kind of out in the gray area between the slot and where the tight end or the tackle is. and blitzes off there, run blitzes off there, reads and reacts off there, will turn and run with the slot receiver on occasion. But his role is defensive dynamo, defensive playmaker. He's now I know the next thing you're going to say is that, well, he doesn't make any turnovers. Well, some of that is a function of opportunity, and he just doesn't get many opportunities to do it. But he is so good at, for a guy his size, he's a phenomenal blitzer. He's a great tackler. Before the Iowa game, where he missed two tackles, and that was the worst game I've seen from him in since he moved to the hybrid role that he's in now. I think he'd missed one tackle on the year. So normally a really just a big hitter. He tackles fundamentally well, too. He gets his shoulder pad into your belly button. He lifts up. He keeps his head up. You know, he squares things up. He can break down from being at full speed to not overrun a play.
You're dead on in terms of he's for sure going to be a base package safety in the NFL. And you can tell that he kind of doesn't trust what he sees in terms of his coverage, but he does have pretty good instincts on the field. And I mean, and the dude is a sick athlete. There is absolutely no denial. I mean, there's a reason why they keep giving him the ball. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, he's great on running plays. I would never use him in the NFL as that, but if you watch him return punts, there's a guy who's he's going to return a couple of kicks for touchdowns in the NFL in his day. He's just got that kind of vision, the acceleration. He hits top speed on the second. When he gets the second paw down, he's at top speed. And I think I can't stress this enough. Too many people are still looking back when he was a corner and when he wasn't that great at it and thinking, right, oh, he can't cover. If you're asking your strong safety to be in man coverage more than like five times a game, you're going to get fired. That's untenable. So the position that he played his first year and a half at Michigan doesn't exist in the NFL. So you have to just block that out of your mind. Forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, almost pretty much the same exact situation with Miles Jack went through, to where they're basically play, like, from what I saw, it looks like they're basically playing the same position in college. Different body types, obviously, but in terms of that, it's not really a strong linebacker. It really is I know that they're not playing a 3-3-5, but it is like that rover type role to where.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what Ramsey did his second year.
Yeah, no, he was another guy that did that exact same thing, to where they're playing so many spread offenses that you have, like, the defensive coordinator is basically making a decision. We're not gonna sub between a Sam linebacker and a slot corner. We're just gonna have put our best athlete there and have him match up with whatever the offense wants to do.
Yeah, no, definitely. Okay, my kind of question for you, Jeff, is, like, how many guys, like, he's obviously, like, a rare type of player, but, you know, you see him compared to Deion Buchanan and the Cam and Keanu Neal's. How many guys, like, who are the type of player he is with his strengths and weaknesses, have, like, we seen come into the NFL?
I'll give you one from this year. Jatavis Brown in San Diego is this kind of player.
Okay.
He's been really good. He's been excellent this year.
He has been. And that's basically the role that he's playing with Michigan, too. It is similar to Miles Jack, but Jack was, he was, what, 240? Probably played in the 230s.
Yeah.
And he didn't have the hips either. But he was actually, I would say that Miles Jack is more instinctive in man coverage. I think he has a better concept of what the offense is trying to do against him. But Peppers reacts so much quicker. And so much faster in every direction than Miles Jack.
Well, and the difference between Miles and Peppers, and to use a term that I think you're the one that coined it, is that you can tell that Miles is the better coverage player, but Peppers is the better player at actually terminating the play and getting the ball carrier on the ground.
You know, Marty Schottenheimer told me this a long time ago at the first Senior Bowl I was at. The number one thing I want to see in a linebacker who can terminate a play. And it has really stuck with me and resonated with me for a long time. You know, as athletically gifted as Miles Jack was, he really didn't do that a whole lot.
But no,
you see Jabril Peppers do it all the time. He had more tackles for loss this September than Miles Jack did in 3 years at UCLA.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you can see that with Miles at this level. Like, the fact that Miles' best play this season has been him running running down Lamar Miller. And when, like, on most other plays, he's, you know, like, he's getting in on tackles, but he's not making plays. But if you're a defense like Jacksonville and say he's replacing Jalen Cyprien, who Cyprien, as much as he's improved, you don't reassign him because he makes zero plays. Like, he has 2 interceptions and 1 sack in 4 years where he has started almost every game. How confident would you be in Peppers becoming that kind of player at the next level? Like, is it just an opportunity thing?
No, I think that's a valid criticism. I really do. And it's unfortunate that you are going to have to project him becoming more of a playmaker at the next level. But he does have a lot of opportunities to force some fumbles, and he hasn't done that.
Mm-hmm.
And other than the one play against Maryland where he ran it back, he hasn't, you know, gotten his hands on a loose football. That is a little bit concerning to me, and it's something that, you know, there are guys that have that and guys that don't. Cyprien doesn't have that. He didn't necessarily have it in college. I'll go back to a guy that we had in Detroit, Louis Delmas. That guy had a knack for getting the ball in his hands one way or another. He wasn't a great safety, but he was really good at that. And Jacksonville, like we talked about earlier, has a real tough time creating takeaways. Detroit has the same problem. You're going to have a creative defensive coordinator who trusts him. And I'm not sure that there's a lot of NFL teams that will use him right.
I feel like if you didn't change anything with the staff or front office or anything, I feel like they would be taking a running back in the top 5 probably. Just seeing at what they've done in the past and like how they value positions and things of that nature.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
I think if everybody stayed in place in Jacksonville, if they went defense, it would be Peppers to replace Cyprien, and if it was offense, I think they would take Fournette. That's my opinion of what they would do. I don't think that these same people are going to be around, so I don't think I have to worry about it too much. But are Fournette or Dalvin Cook, are they guys worth taking? Like, are they on? I mean, Ezekiel Elliott has been absolutely insane. Are they on that level of talent at running back?
If you could tell me that Dalvin Cook's shoulder is going to hold up for the entirety of his rookie contract, I would say he is. But I'm not taking that leap. He's had 2 shoulder reconstruction surgeries, and he's also injured the other one. If you're going to take that in the top 5, God bless you. I'm not. He's a really good all-around running back. I loved Ezekiel Elliott. I boldly proclaimed last year that he would be a hell of a lot better than Todd Gurley, and a lot of people gave me shit about that. Y'all can see it.
Oh, not even close. Yeah.
I would rank Dalvin Cook between them just simply on the field. But the off the field, that injury stuff, that matters. If you want to look at it, look at the Detroit Lions with injury issues. We lost Mikel LeShore, who came into the league with injury issues, and we've lost Amir Abdullah 2 freaking years in a row. That's a first-round pick and 2 second-round picks. So I'm overly sensitive to that, so I wouldn't touch Dalvin Cook because of that, and that's unfortunate, but that's where I'm at with it. So I'm going to be cautious on that. I don't think Fournette is that great because I like launching pads and landing strips on my porn stars. I don't like them on my running backs, and he needs one, and that's very unfortunate. You know, if you watch him, one of the things that I loved about Ezekiel Elliott, and we all saw it the other night in the game against Pittsburgh, he's the best short yardage back in football at any level. He was at Ohio State, and he is at Dallas already. If you look at Leonard Fournette's numbers, he's not good on short yardage. When he has to run between the tackles and doesn't have the threat of breaking it outside, he's a pedestrian running back. And I'm not taking a guy that, you know, now he's incredibly difficult to tackle. When he gets a guy one-on-one in space, he's going to win 90% of the time. Okay. And he's a good back, and I think he's going to be successful. But I don't think he's going to be a game-changing type of back. Look at what Todd Gurley's doing in Los Angeles right now. They have 5 freaking right tackles on their offensive line, which means that they should be able to run block pretty well, and they don't. And he has no ability to create on his own without those guys making the first block for him. And I see that exact same issue with Leonard Fournette going forward. Now, that's not to say that I think he sucks, because people are going to misconstrue that. But he's a guy that you have to have a specific style of blocking. You have to have good interior run blocking for that guy to be successful. And does Jacksonville have that? Probably not.
Absolutely 100% not. The injury concerns with Dalvin that you bring up too, I think, are really notable. That's something that I know Justin Higdon talks about it on the Draft Breakdown podcast all the time.
Justin and I are really good friends, aside from being in draft. So he might have a little bit of influence on that there too. So I'll cop to that.
No, yeah, and I know that. But he's really like opened my eyes to that over the last couple of years. Like, because you kind of just like you have this internal bias or blind yourself that like because you really only remember the guys that make it back, and you kind of forget about all the guys that like. Not even guys that have, like, devastating injuries, just guys that have, like, are constantly nicked up all the time and you know, can never get over it. I mean, the example that sticks out in my mind is Roy Williams and his hamstrings. Like, Roy Williams was a fantastic wide receiver, but, I mean, by the time he was in, like, his fourth or fifth year, his speed was gone because his hamstrings were so shot and there was just nothing left there. I think you're kind of seeing that with Lamar Miller. Lamar had shoulder issues much like Dalvin in college.
Yes, he did.
And that's what ended up dropping him to the fourth round.
This draft is so freaking loaded with running backs. There are so many good ones. And you can name your flavor too. You need a speed guy? Okay, we got five speed guys. You need a power guy? Great. You need a scat back? You know, you need a guy who can catch? You need CJ ProSize 2.0 since he's a hot name right now? I can get you all those guys in this draft. This is such a deep running back draft. If you're taking a guy in the first round, you better be damn sure that he's going to be your bell cow guy. He's going to get 25 to 30 touches a game, deliver you 100 to 125 yards and a touchdown every week, week in and week out. Because if not, you're wasting the pick because there are guys later in the draft who are going to do that maybe 8 to 10 times a year for you, which is pretty typical of the top-level backs in this league. Guys like, to go deeper, you know, Kareem Hunt out of Toledo is a guy that nobody talks about. He would have been a top-five back in last year's draft. He might be the 12th best back in this draft.
Crazy.
I think y'all are going to pick between 4 and 8. So if you're picking a guy in that range, you're not getting your return on investment with a running back in this draft. So I would wait till the, you know, second, third, fourth, maybe even double up. I don't think Yeldon's bad. If you make him your number two back, I think you're okay. So you can get a guy, you know, second, third, fourth round, go for it. I wouldn't go at the top here.
Just Dalvin Cook specific, but he's one of the few guys I think you can, like, just talent-wise, there's not, like, a copy of him anywhere, you know? Like, there's no, like, discount version of him. He turns 3-yard losses into 50-yard touchdowns. But on the other hand, just, like, watching him week in and week out, the injury, like, concerns are legit. And, like, people are going to use, like, he hasn't missed a lot of games in his career, and people are going to use that throughout, like, the season to pump maybe the narrative that injuries aren't a big deal with him. But it seems like he's having to exit games at one point.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, too. And I'm right there with you on Fournette being good, but not – I think there's a little – he was, like, the top recruit out of high school coming out, right?
Yeah, he was. Like, the next,
yeah. I think there's still a little bit of that going on with him. I don't even like because from when I've watched him, I don't even think he's as good as Henry was last year.
I'd agree with that. Actually, I'm with you there.
So I don't know. I like him and everything, but I don't like him top five, which is where it seems like he's being projected as like a top 5 or 10 pick. So we'll see. Ryan, I think we're running a little long, and I don't think we're going to get a question and answer session this week.
Well, there is one question. Joe Fry wanted to know how much the Jags are going to lose by, and I think that's a fitting question to end with.
Sure. My official pick, and I do my picks column at Real GM every week. Shameless plug for that. It'll be out Thursday. I picked Lions 27, Jaguars 20, but the Lions will be leading 24-3 at halftime.
That sounds like every single Jaguars game. So
that's why I picked it.
Yep, sign me up for that. And then that's a Detroit cover too. So I will also take that as well, because I think the line is 6.5 right now.
Yep,
the Lions are due for a game where they actually come out and beat somebody and don't let them back in it. And
this is the perfect team to do it against.
Well, welcome to the Jacksonville bye weeks.
I'm glad you guys said that and not me.
All right. And I think that's going to do it for us. Everybody, Jeff, first of all, thank you for coming on. Everybody, you can follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff Risden. Check out his work on Draft Breakdown. I'm sure as draft season approaches, that's Jacksonville fans are used to this. By November is draft season every year, so this is definitely our flat circle. But yeah, like I said, thank you for coming on, for previewing the Lions game with us, shooting some draft shit with us. Please continue to subscribe and review the show on iTunes, everybody. I know we didn't get to that many questions, but we'll probably get to some more next week.